Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. Coming up this hour, what's wrong with the new DSM? The official catalog of mental health disorders. We'll talk to a critic, Connecticut psychotherapist Gary Greenberg, and video blogger and comedian Francesca Ramsey with her top rules for social media etiquette and some of yours. But right now, if I say culture clash, what's the first conflict you think about? Well, my next guest says there are eight culture clashes that define us. Hazel Rose Marcus is the founder of Stanford's Research Institute for Comparative Studies and Ethnicity and a professor at Stanford. She's now the co-author with Alana Connor of Clash, Eight Cultural Conflicts That Make Us Who We Are. So we'll go through the eight and we'll dig in on a couple that are particularly compelling. Professor Marcus, welcome to WNYC. Professor Marcus, can you hear me? All right. I can hear her, but I have a feeling she can't hear me. And listeners, we have it. Oh, now we got you. Hi. Thanks for coming on. Hello from New York.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we have an excerpt on our website from the book, folks. So you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to check out the eight cultural conflicts that make us who we are. And I guess at the heart of the book, and as you argue, at the heart of cultural clashes, as you see them, is the idea of the independent self and the interdependent self. And this is actually a sociological concept that you've been developing. So what does it mean, and how can people tell which category they fall into?
Right. So in our book, Clash, Eight Cultural Conflicts That Make Us Who We Are, we explain why people with different cultural backgrounds fight and what we can do to bridge the divides between them. And we show in the book that despite the wide variety of these cultural conflicts, many of them stem from the same root cause, the one you've referred to, and that's the clash of independence and interdependence. And let me explain that just a bit. All of us have two sides to ourselves. Our independent side wants to be separate, unique, and in control. Our interdependent side wants to be connected, similar, and cooperative. And depending on your particular mix of cultures, you tend to use one side more than the other. And tensions arise when people using their independent side come into contact with people using their more interdependent side.
Libertarians versus communitarians in political terms, no?
Yes, absolutely. So what we are hoping our book will be is an invitation for all of us to think about ourselves and other people in a new way. And, of course, no one has just one culture. We all have a whole many different cultures of nation, region, race, gender, class, religion, workplace, of political orientation, the communitarians versus libertarians, as you say. And as the world gets smaller, each of us, we hope and we argue, we'll have to become much more skilled at using our broad cultural palettes to make sense of the other person and to thrive in the 21st century.
So let's go down a few examples of the particulars. One is East versus West, and by that you mean in a global sense. So why is that about independence and interdependence?
Okay, so every day, for example, and this one comes to us clearly out here in the Silicon Valley, we see clashes of independence and interdependence in our classrooms. In the West, people tend to use their independent selves more. In the East, they tend to use their interdependent selves more. So, for example, many children of Asian heritage are taught to be good interdependent students. They're taught to listen calmly, quietly, and respectfully to their teachers, to absorb the information and question later. But in mainstream American classrooms, the teachers want students to be more independent. They want them to speak up, to smile, and as they get older, to challenge what they're being taught with their own unique ideas.
Yeah, maybe the American kids are coming in wearing the question authority buttons that they got from their baby boomer parents. So there's East versus West, and this melds with another one of the conflicts in the book. We'll call it number two, Global North versus Global South. So East-West and North-South, and there's a third regional clash, and that's Coast versus Heartland. So is there an element of predestiny to the way we see the world? If someone is born and raised and lives their life in New York City, they fall into their West and Coast category, your Northeast category in a sense, and your Global North category, and then they're very, very independent?
Well, they will tend to use their independent side more. But the point is, people can learn to use the other self. So if you use your independent self more, you can learn to use your interdependent self more. And that's one of the messages of our book is that you, if you think this way, you can think about yourself as having two selves that you can use depending on the conflict, which is really, and you can help yourself cultivate that self by understanding that other conflict, that other context, traveling there, reading about it, trying to understand it.
You also describe a Boston versus San Francisco divide, and that surprised me because both are coastal and both are urban. So what would that be, Boston versus San Francisco?
Yes, that's one that we've done a lot of work on and a variety of studies. And even though the coasts are both more independent than the Midwest or the South, and of course when you're more independent, you have more of a focus on yourself, and we have a concern with interdependence, there's more a focus on the relationship. It's still the case that our studies show that the West Coast is even more independent than the East Coast. And we've one set of studies we report is an analysis of venture capital websites, and you can analyze these and see that those in the West Coast put much more stress on innovation, being unique and creative, while those on the East Coast, although they're still about doing this very innovative thing, stress status and experience. And so we find that particularly out here in the Silicon Valley, there's really a super emphasis on being independent.
But in the U.S. context, I guess there must be different kinds of independence, because if you're framing the coasts as being the place where the independent people live and the Midwest as being the place where the interdependent people live, well, people in the heartland often tend to be the more libertarian, you know, you're not going to come into my house and take away my guns or whatever kind of people politically. To subscribe to this, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, the American pioneer spirit, going out and doing it on your own initiative, whereas people in cities maybe are more community-oriented. So I'm not sure I understand the distinction quite.
Well, that's a very good question, and the point is that we are all a mix of various cultures, and so you have to locate yourself. You have to think of, well, you're in the West, so as an American, so that will tend to foster and give you an independent self. But if you're in the Midwest, that may tend, for many reasons, to foster a more interdependent self, a more focus on relationships and interdependence and fitting in. But then, of course, you have to think about what political party you are ascribing to and what messages you are hearing. And that may be fostering yet a different self. But we find really that the conservative messages, if you analyze them, they actually are fostering an interdependent self, more of a concern with being with family, with community, than the Democratic Party, which tends to foster an independent self.
Hazel Rose Marcus from Stanford with us, author of Clash, 8 Cultural Conflicts That Make Us Who We Are. And the unifying thread here among these 8 is a scale of dependence or interdependence through independence. And let me just go through a couple of these other ones real quick before we run out of time.
Okay.
One is gender, the clash between men and women. I guess the classic assumption would be that women are more interdependent and focus themselves in relation to other people, while men are more independent. Is that what you found?
Well, we find that although everyone, of course, is different, research does show that women tend to favor their interdependent sides, while men tend to use their independent sides more often. Thousands of studies show that. And so, but when a woman, for example, attempts to negotiate her salary, she's thinking not only about what she wants for herself, but she tends to be thinking about her relationship with her boss and her coworkers and what will it mean if she argues for herself. And that drives many women to ask for less, to walk away from the negotiation sooner, because they don't want to jeopardize their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the many reasons why women are still making only 77 cents to a man's dollar. So what we suggest, you're not stuck with that, and I think that's really one of our messages. You can learn to summon and harness the other side of yourself. So women can harness their interdependence for independent ends. They can think about negotiating on behalf of their family, mm-hmm. and they'll feel stronger and push for more for themselves.
And similarly, along some other familiar lines, conservative versus liberal religious groups. You could see where the independent versus interdependent comes in there. Another one is business versus government and nonprofits. We remember from the presidential campaign last year, the whole question over, you didn't build that, right? Where the pro-business people were, I built this with my own hands. I don't want to be taxed for Obamacare or whatever, and the president pushing back and saying, no, you didn't build this on your own. There was all this stuff that community and government did that helped make it possible. And the last one that I'll get a response from you to is whites versus people of color, because you seek to answer the question, why do many blacks, Latinos, and other people of color know that discrimination keeps them down, while many whites sincerely believe that race no longer matters? How is that relevant to your theory?
Right. Well, we see that whites tend to be very independence-minded. They view themselves and other people, just as you were saying, as I made that self-made and self-propelled. And as Americans, of course, many non-whites have well-developed independent selves because they're part of the West here. But they also have very well-developed interdependent selves. They tend to see that their races and ethnicities are central to who they are. When you're in the minority, you quickly learn that your existence is pegged to other people's views. So in the book, we say that for many minorities, instead of thinking, I think, therefore I am, it's really you think, therefore I am. And because yourself is pegged to what other people think about you, you tend to have a more interdependent self. And so we look at many studies in the book that show, for example, if you put two strangers of different races together to talk, they make more speech errors. If you have one black and one white, and they're strangers to each other and they're talking, they make more speech errors, they sit farther apart, they fidget, they avert their eyes, and ultimately they feel worse about themselves than if you put two people of the same race together. And we think this is because people are so tense and nervous about each other. Whites are worried that they're going to say or do something racist, and blacks, Latinos are equally worried that something like this is going to come up. And what they don't understand are the sources of the tensions that they are experiencing.
Okay.
And so what we're trying to throughout the book is to see that if you find yourself having a conflict with someone, our advice would be slow to judge. First, just don't assume that the other person is a jerk. That's the first step. And then second, begin to entertain the possibility that you're both stumbling over a cultural divide. And the divide is that one of you may be using your independent side and the other may be using his or her interdependent side.
Well, a really good paradigm for understanding ourselves and others, and we'll have to leave it there with Hazel Rowe Marcus, founder of Stanford's Research Institute for Comparative Studies in Ethnicity, and now the co-author of Clash, 8 Cultural Conflicts That Make Us Who We Are. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And speaking of understanding ourselves, Coming up next, what's wrong with the new DSM, the official catalog of mental health disorders? We'll talk to Connecticut psychotherapist Gary Greenberg, who watched the new manual take shape over the last 2 years and thinks it medicalizes way too much of our lives. He even says psychiatry should not be seen as a science. Gary Greenberg on the new DSM next.